Hello, everybody. I can't believe I'm actually speaking on Zoom. I've been watching you all and listening to you all for years. Never had the prompt to speak. And then something got a hold of me and told me to raise a voice. So here I am, in spite of myself. There have been very many familiar faces to me from the 2015 and 16 retreats that I attended in Colorado Springs, where I met Regina and many of you. There are other faces that I've seen on Zoom but don't know personally. But as the poet Hafez says, our hearts have known each other for a very long, long time. So I think we all do know one another in that way. My name is Mary Ballard. I'm a garden variety ego most of my life. I'm 67 years old. I live in central Kentucky. And my journey has been unique, I would say, as each of our journeys are. But it is certainly going, I think, toward the moon, which is the topic of my talk today. But first, I want to get to the announcements that Regina sent to me. I'm going to read them slowly, and then we'll get on with the service. The Awakening Together Fall Retreat is only 3 months away. So far, we have 13 people who are coming to the self-awareness retreat and 9 people who are coming to the Satsang and Sangha retreat. Those who are coming to both retreats are invited to lodge at the retreat house. We are filling up, but we have a couple of rooms left. So far, those who are lodging elsewhere have selected the Two Fox Cabins as the place to stay. In fact, 7 Awakening Together members have let us know that they will stay at the Two Fox Cabins for the fall retreat. There are also other lodging options available in La Vida. You can find that information on our website if you go to Retreats and Classes and then click on AT Fall Retreat. You will find a link to lodging options at the bottom of the page. You also find a link to scholarship information and a link to register at the bottom of the Fall Retreat web page. If you've decided to come to both of our fall retreats, you'll get 20% off of the second retreat. The first retreat, the self-awareness retreat, begins on October 20th and runs through October 26th. The Satsang and Sangha retreat begins on October 28th and runs through November 2nd. We have room for 23 people at each retreat. So we still have plenty of room for you. Get full details about the Awakening Together Fall Retreat on the Awakening Together website under Retreats and Classes. Second announcement. Registration closes today for the next MPP class, Introduction to NTI. This is a 6-week class with a primary focus on developing a new habit, the habit of removing attention from ego and placing it with spiritual wisdom instead. The class will be facilitated by Reverend Doreen Bonnet. The cost is $120. Homework begins this Tuesday, and the class will begin the next Tuesday, August 6th. Classes are every Tuesday, August 6th through September 10th, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. The third announcement. Join us tonight for a discussion of Inception, this month's Awakening Together movie. If you haven't seen the movie yet, you still have this afternoon to watch. It is a 2010 science fiction movie written and directed by visionary Christopher Nolan and starring Leonardo DiCaprio. It's about a team who infiltrates the subconscious of a CEO by projecting themselves into his dreams. Rotten Tomatoes gave the film a score of 87%, while their audience gave it a score of 91%. CNN film critic Tom Charity said Inception is, and I quote, the smartest CGI head trip since The Matrix. You can find the play sheet that Jay created for the film on Awakening Together website under audios and videos, Sanctuary Highlights. Look near the bottom of the menu for Movie Watchers Group. Join us for the discussion of Inception here in the Sanctuary tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 5 p.m. Pacific Time. So unless there are any other announcements, that's all I have. So with that, we will greet one another in the sanctuary, and Dawn will play our theme song, and we'll get underway.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
You can hear me? Okay. Next, I'll read a statement of purpose, and I chose core value number 3. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the individual self as who we are. And now Dawn will play the opening song, so just let it go, Dawn.
Turn
Brothers and sisters, let's go in the tent together. I'm going to read the invocation, and I picked a lesson from A Course in Miracles that expresses desire from this heart today, and maybe from yours, obviously, as well. So this is lesson 254. Let every voice but God's be still in me. Father, today I would but hear your voice. In deepest silence, I would come to you to hear your voice and to receive your word. I have no prayer but this. I come to you to ask you for the truth. And truth is but your will, which I would share with you today. Today, we let no ego thoughts direct our words or actions. When such thoughts occur, we quietly step back and look at them, and then we let them go. We do not want what they would bring with them, and so we do not choose to keep them. They are silent now, and in the stillness, hallowed by his love, God speaks to us and tells us of our will as we have chosen to remember him. Amen. Now, my reader today is the lovely Kathy Smith, who I met in 2015 and who I just love her to death. And she is a heart sister for sure. And she has agreed to read a couple of sections or parts of From A Course in Miracles for our reading today. So, Kathy, thank you, and I'll turn the mic over to you.
Thanks, Mary. when Mary contacted me about reading and then shared that she wanted me to read from the Course, I haven't read from the Course in a long time now. And so as I previewed what she sent to me, I noticed, just like Karen spoke about in meditation this morning, the mind wanting to drop back into a habitual reading of a very familiar text. And I'm glad I noticed that, because I took several more opportunities to reread what I'm going to share with you. One paragraph, paragraph 8 from chapter 21, Reason and Perception. And I ask you to listen with new ears. One other thing. When Mary called, I had an ironing board set up, and I had searched for the iron for that ironing board, like, I don't know, all morning, because I don't really like to iron. So it was tucked away someplace like I was never, ever going to use it. And when I asked Mary, what are you doing? She said, I'm ironing. And I said, well, what are you ironing? And she said, well, you know, like pillowcases. Now, I don't iron pillowcases, but Mary apparently does. And then she said, you know, before my husband retired, I would iron his shirts and like maybe lab coats. I believe he's a physician. And so I could kind of see that. But even then, I'm like, oh, I would hate to do that. And Mary said, you know, it's a rainy day here in Kentucky, and I love to iron. I could make a living ironing, I think she said. And I almost was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, talk about the yin and the yang, either side of it being okay. But it was so ironic to me that my ironing board was set up in my own space, and I still haven't ironed that stuff, and I put the board and the iron away. so just one of the just a funny little thing before I start on section 8 of A Course in Miracles on page 447 in the chapter 21 called Reason and Perception. So beyond the body, beyond the sun and stars, past everything you see, and yet somehow familiar, is an arc of golden light that stretches as you look into a great and shining circle. And all the circle fills with light before your eyes. The edges of the circle disappear, and what is in it is no longer contained at all. The light expands and covers everything, extending to infinity, forever shining, and with no break or limit anywhere. Within it, everything is joined in perfect continuity, nor is it possible to imagine that anything could be outside, for there is nowhere that this light is not. And then with that, I'm going to be reading lesson 252, The Son of God is My Identity, on page 420, if you have the workbook open. So myself is holy beyond all the thoughts of holiness of which I now conceive. Its shimmering and perfect purity is far more brilliant than is any light that I have ever looked upon. Its love is limitless, with an intensity that holds all things within it in the calm of quiet certainty. Its strength comes not from burning impulses which move the world, but from the boundless love of God Himself. How far beyond this world myself must be, and yet how near to me and close to God. Father, You know my true identity. Reveal it now to me, who are Your Son, that I may waken to the truth in You and know that heaven is restored to me. Giving up the mic.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much. Beautiful. Well, I chose those passages because the themes in those passages, which I don't think you could help but notice, were light and love. And so for this morning's talk, you know, how often do we speak in the spiritual community of light and love? It just comes out a lot. And so I think for today's message, I'm going to use the moon as a metaphor. It'll be our symbol for oneness or the absolute. And I think it's appropriate because 50 years ago this year, people of a certain age, which could be all of us here, watched man walk on the moon. In 1969, I was a senior in high school, and I went to a moon landing party, which you all probably did too, and sat on the floor in front of a black and white TV with grainy live images of the astronauts stepping out of their craft and onto the surface of the moon. And at the time, I mean, think about that, 50 years ago, that seemed like an impossible event, an impossible accomplishment, and there before our eyes it was happening. So if we use the moon as a metaphor, we can think in terms of trying to reach the oneness that we speak about so often. And we can correlate it as also an impossible task, a seeming impossible task. That man could walk on the moon was virtually unbelievable. And maybe to you, that you could know oneness is also virtually unbelievable. But one of them has happened, or seems to have happened. So is anything impossible? I don't think so. You know, from the beginning of time, I'm sure humans have gazed at the moon as a mystery. And also for millennia, when there was consciousness to suspect there was a higher being other than the earthly body, humans wondered in awe about God, or what they would equate with God. And both of those things, apparently for all these years, have been beckoning to us, the moon and God. Well, this message today from me is offered as a humble confession of sorts, because I'm being as humble as I can in telling you that I have had a direct and powerful experience of God's presence. What happened, and I don't even remember, I don't remember the time, the year, barely the place, but I do remember the event, because the event was seared into my heart. But because my body was not involved with this, it doesn't remember too much about it. However, unlike the NASA astronauts, I was not prepared for this at all. This was totally unthought of, unprepared. I was a new spiritual student. I've been in Course in Miracles class for about, I don't know, maybe 3 years, going through the book slowly with a group of people. I came to the course totally naive, because I didn't even know what it was. I was retired, and I thought, well, this sounds interesting. I was curious about it. I had no idea what I was getting into, literally. So I hadn't, at the time that this occurred, I hadn't built up a lot of concepts or ideas about spiritual identity. I was just going to class every week and pretty much forgetting it the rest of the week. So when this seemed to occur to me, it blew me apart, literally. You know, it wasn't, I'm going to speak of it in terms of a place and a time and a person, because that's the only way I can relate in dualistic terms about this. But at the same time, you have to remember the metaphysics here. There was no time, place, or person. So just keep that in mind. Being there on the moon, so to speak, was not frightening. But the descent back to Earth was terrifying. And, you know, in A Course in Miracles, when Jesus says, do not fear that you will be abruptly hurled into reality because the terror it would induce would be too great. Well, I think he forgot about me, because I must have slipped through the cracks. So I'm going to attempt to share with you what this experience was. But there's a few sentences I located in A Course in Miracles that will kind of let you know that I really can't talk about this. So it's kind of futile, but somehow necessary, I think. In A Course in Miracles, in the chapter called Revelation, Time, and Miracles, there's a couple of sentences that stand out to me and have for years. One of them is, Revelation unites you directly with God. Now, that is such a powerful statement that when it's read, you think, well, I don't know, not for me, maybe. Maybe that's just some nice words. Then in paragraph 2, it says, revelation is intensely personal and cannot be meaningfully translated. That it is why any attempt to describe it in words is impossible. And revelation induces only experience. So I would have to say, in a way, it was an experience, but I wasn't apart from the experience. You know, we talk about the experience and the experiencer. There again, there's duality there. But I'm just going to talk to you like in dualistic terms because I really have no other way to try to relay this to you. So if I had to put a name on this event, I would call it revelation. And, you know, I'm speaking of it as if it was something that happened to a me, but only so I can, like I say, so that I can relay as much of it as best I can. When Kathy was reading earlier in chapter 21, the way Jesus says, a golden light that expands and extends to infinity. And then her second reading about the light shimmering far more brilliant than any you've looked upon. Take this literally. There's a lot of metaphor and symbolism in the Course, but also there are some literal statements, and this is absolutely literal. And if you wanted to try to imagine this for yourself, if you took a billion suns, the light of a billion suns, and combined it, and it washed over you and absorbed you while you're still retaining awareness, that brilliant light would be something you could maybe visualize. And it's not static. It is so dynamic, this light. It is extending and expanding and extending and expanding, just constant energy. And there is awareness that the light is filled with a limitless, boundless love of God. And in Kathy's reading, she confirmed that when Jesus said in his Course that there was limitless, boundless love of God himself. So if you've ever wondered or been afraid that if you're not here, you would be in some empty black void, I can tell you that is not the case. There is so much dynamic energy and light that you cannot imagine it. And this love, the love I experienced or was part of, was unlike any earthly love you have ever felt for anyone or anything. It is not of this world. And with that love, you could call it glory or joy or magnificence. All of these are one dynamic envelopment. It's the love of God is atomic. It is powerful. It is so glorious that a human heart couldn't contain it. So nothing, ultimately nothing in the presence of God is like anything here. There is nothing here that's there. If I had to say my consciousness as a human being, my awareness as a human being, well, let's put it another way. My consciousness is, say, ego consciousness, but my awareness, as we have talked, awareness, watching awareness, there is awareness there that is unlimited awareness. There's no specifics. It's complete abstraction, like you've been told over and over again. But the awareness that you can have here is a shadow or a reflection, I would say, not a shadow, a reflection of the awareness in heaven, we'll call it. And the other awareness was of a peace that truly does pass all understanding. This dimension, I'll call it, is outside of time and space entirely. There is nothing there that is like anything here that we are used to. There really is nothing else but this dimension, this reality. So this, you know, it was apparent in some way that this is home, this is our source, this is where we are. And it was so familiar, but awesome. I can't say the appropriate words. But then at some point, of course, I fell to earth. And I slowly began to emerge from this. It seemed to occur when I was taking a nap. So in sleep, a body's senses are closed down. Your consciousness is closed down. You're in a very non-judgmental state when you're sleeping. I was taking a nap when this seemed to happen. So when I emerged back into the body's senses, I really didn't want to come back, just like people say in your death experiences. I was struggling to stay there than to be back here with my family and my life. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. I would be there and just be there. So I, you know, when I began to descend back into the body, I could feel the clouds of sort of ego coming back in and telling me things about this. Just like a spaceship, when it reenters the atmosphere, I was experiencing a lot of friction and a lot of uncomfortable feelings. My heart was racing. My respiration rate was really high. I struggled to kind of wake up. And as I became body conscious, I was unable to sustain any of those experiences of the light and the peace. But the love, that magnificent love that I was part of, stayed with me for about 3 months after that, just gradually fading away. And then it was gone too. And it went back into memory. But, you know, I was confused. I was disoriented about what really just happened. My ego jumped in and said, oh, you've had a heart attack. You've had a crazy dream. And none of that made sense to me. I'm a registered nurse. I know if I'm ill or having trouble physically. So this was nothing to do with the body. And I didn't tell anybody about it for a long time because I didn't think anybody would believe me. Yet in my heart, I knew that this was direct unification with God. And you would think such a direct experience would confirm reality to you for the rest of your life. You just go, well, I'm awake. That's it. I've seen the light. You know, nothing here is real. But that's not how it worked for me, at least. You know, when ego realized it was so threatened, boy, did it kick in. And so I had a lot to deal with for years after this, but I was willing never to let go of the true experience. I never doubted it. I never denied it. I could take all kinds of circuitous routes to try to find out, you know, what it was, but analyzing it made no sense. And I did sort of feel like a orphan, because if you've had the direct experience of oneness, then what in the heck are you doing down here? And I was filled with questions that were generated, obviously, by the ego, but they disturbed me because I wasn't confirmed in this experience yet. I mean, that was 12 years ago, say that it happened, and it's taken me this long and probably the rest of my life to confirm it so solidly, more than the experience of being a body. You know, I just can't be two places at once. We've all heard that. There's reality, and then there's absolute reality, and then there's relative reality. But you really cannot be in two places at once. But I seem to have that experience. I seem to be here, and I knew I was there. So, you know, this brought up a lot of questions. Questions for me that, you know, ego was happy to answer for me. One of the questions I had was, you know, what do I do about this thing and all it's involved with if I'm not really here? How do I deal with this relative experience of being a human? And, you know, the other question, which dovetails off that, is, okay, so if I'm really in heaven, then who takes care of, protects me and takes care of me and all the people I love and the earth even, you know, who takes care of all that? And, you know, that is an ego, definitely an ego inquiry. But I'm letting you know that that was part of this experience, because I wasn't prepared to be so overwhelmed by uncertainty after having that experience. So, you know, what has come to be my understanding at this point, at least, is that, you know, who is asking those questions is, and who and what is asking those questions, that would have to be the ego. And, you know, if I'm concerned about myself as a person and my safety and the safety of my loved ones, then I'm right and God's wrong. We both can't be right. And after hanging out with him for a little bit, I'm going to bet on him. I'm going to say he's always right. And these questions are just smoke screens. You know, why do I need to worry about a person in a place that doesn't exist? Now, that's a long way. That's a lot of years of inquiry and contemplation. But the reason I can have life without as much pain and struggle is that I understand that it's pretty much non-existent here. It's like a dream, as the Course would call it. And then the thought came from Jesus or the Holy Spirit, well, how much of your nighttime dreams are true? I mean, it was just a plain question. How much of your nighttime dreams are real? Is there any part of your nighttime dream that is ever real? And of course, the answer is no. Lots of things happen in my dreams. Crazy things, good things, sad things, happy things, tragic things, unbelievable things. But none of it is real. So it made me accept, not believe, but accept that non-duality is non-compromising. You can't have a little duality and non-duality, or you're just delaying the process. You know, a lot of fingers point to the moon. We all know that. We've studied them. But do you really want to go to the moon, or do you just want to study the fingers? That's a question I had to ask myself, having been to the moon. I really want the means that Jesus speaks of in the Course. He says, revelation may occasionally reveal the end to you, but to reach it, the means are needed. So I really want the means, and I'm willing not to manipulate these means. I don't know a thing about them. I don't know what it takes other than my willingness to look at everything that seems to keep me here. And that's every thought, every belief, every opinion, every desire, everything. I have to look at everything with a teacher. I can't do this by myself. So since I'm an old Course in Miracles teacher, I am calling back upon Jesus, the Holy Spirit, to provide the means for me to see this, because I do know what the end is like for all of us. And I'm speaking as it is on a timeline. It's actually our beingness now, as we've been told, and I know that's true. But for the tail of the snake that's still in the room, it has to be let go, like on a timeline, a process. So I'm willing to let Holy Spirit and Jesus guide my way. You know, I have studied the Course, I don't know, been through the book maybe 3 or 4 times. I read it as an ego. I thought it was obscure and beautiful. I had all kinds of opinions about the Course in Miracles, but I have actually been guided back to it and reading it as a self-study with Jesus or the Holy Spirit, because I'm reading it as the beingness, not the person. And it is a whole new book and a whole new teaching for me. So as I thought about this experience and how to relay it to you, I guess I just felt to let myself know, and you along with me, that reality is real. There is truth, and truth is real, and we really have nothing to worry about. We're there. We're completely loved and one. And, you know, we're, as they say, already home. And all the masters and the scriptures that are authentic are telling us this and teaching us this and pointing it out to us. But, you know, the earth and our existence here is our idea, not God's. It's his home that we're in. This was our idea. And it's so hard to let go of life here. Even when it's bad, it's good. You know, we love our misery. Just look at the television and the movies we put out. We love our predicament here because we get to be an individual, and we can triumph over God every time we breathe, we think, we stand, we judge, we kill, we take sides or save an orphan seal or make babies or complain about the weather. We are triumphing. We think we are triumphing over God. We're stealing his kingdom, and we've established our own. So I don't think salvation, as we know it, can be worked out here in the world. You have to really be willing to be an astronaut. You have to be willing to transcend the earth, not just orbit around it and enjoy all the pretty aspects of it and the good feelings and the enlightenment of a distant moon. You have to be going toward the moon to know that you're going to transcend the earth. And, you know, it's not the earth that's the problem. It's our need for an earth. We need a place to hide from God. We are so afraid of waking up that we have created an elaborate system to hide in. We've got bodies. We've got a gazillion separate things to keep us distracted. We've got the earth, we've got universes. All of that stands in the way of our knowing God. And, you know, we are joined with him in this dynamic, shining, brilliant, loving light. Forever and ever, we never were not there. We have a magnificence that's beyond belief. There's existence and then there's beingness. We are the beingness, not the existence. We can exist here and hang out here for 50, 60, 70, 80 years and think we've done something, but we haven't done anything. We've just delayed our knowing of our home. So I guess the question that I ask myself and that you could ask yourself is, do you really want to go to the moon or do you just want to point at it? I would say don't be afraid of going to the moon. You know, like I said, the re-entry into a body was the terrifying part of this whole experience. The world scares the crap out of me. It does, but not heaven, not heaven. You know, we can aim high and you have nothing, absolutely, and I'm going to be a witness, you have nothing to lose by letting go because you have everything. And I'm here to tell it on the mountain. You have everything. So that concludes what the message is today. In your contemplation, I've picked out a song, or actually it's music, there's no words, that to me kind of has a vision of an untethered soul that's leaving earth and heading unbounded toward God. When it crescendos at the end, you'll see what I mean. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that was as touching and heartfelt to you as it was to me. I think it's time now for our open sharing. And I'm not sure that I will see all the hands. So, Dawn, you'll be my co-pilot or the total director here for sharing. And it will be my pleasure to have you do that. Thank you. I guess, do I ask, is there anybody that wants to share any thoughts or contemplations from this morning's talk?
Regina would like to speak.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, Mary, I want to say thank you for saying yes. Mary was not on the schedule to be leading a weekly gathering. The minister who was on the schedule was unable to do so, and so Mary sent me an email saying she'd like to start teaching on the regular schedule, and I wrote back and said, great, how would you like to lead a weekly gathering? And she said, yes. And I'm really grateful that she did. The message was beautiful. I think one thing that really stuck with me from the message, and it's kind of a combination of what you said and the movie that we've just watched, Inception, but kind of seeing the world as a maze that we created to keep ourselves from the absolute. I'm remembering in the last scene of Inception, and this is kind of giving away something I was going to share tonight, but in the last scene of Inception, you know, throughout the entire movie, Cobb wants to see his children's face. Because when he left them, he didn't call out to them and they didn't turn around and he didn't see their faces. And in the last scene of the movie, he gets the opportunity to go home and to see their faces. But he has this little top that he spins to help him know if he's in reality or not. And the top spins and spins and spins in a dream and never falls. And in reality, it topples over. And at the end of the movie, they show us the top that's still spinning. And so what we really don't know for sure is if Cobb awoke to reality or if his desires just pulled him into a deeper level of the dream. And so when you spoke about this elaborate world that we've created to keep ourselves from God, you know, it's just something to contemplate. Those things we think we want most in the world are really just pulling us deeper into the dream. You talked about how, and I know that you love your family, but you talked about how you didn't want to come back to anything. You didn't, not even your family, you know. So to think that even our family members, those things that we are most involved with, are part of the maze, a part of the distraction that we created. It's something that needs to be contemplated very, very deeply. And if anybody hasn't seen Inception yet, while you watch Inception this afternoon, you could contemplate that. Are we really waking up or pulling ourselves deeper into the dream? It's a great question. And as we know, the masters have given us means of waking up, awareness, watching, awareness, meditation being a primary means that we see from many masters. And so, yeah, I think it was a great question. Do I really want to wake up or do I just want to keep playing in this dream? You know, what do I want? Do I want to go to the moon? Or is part of my dream the joy of studying the fingers that point to the moon? So thank you, Mary, for saying yes. It was brilliant. I loved it. And I'm guessing I'm not the only one who loved it. Releasing the mic.
Do I have it now? Okay, there we go. Thank you, Regina. Yes, I have seen Inception. I've seen it. I guess I saw it some years ago without really knowing what I was watching. I will watch it again. I know this is a big challenge for some of us. It's still a challenge for me. And part of the reason I wanted to start a little program was to look at what tethers us here as a group. I'm hoping it'll be a discussion more than a teaching. I might get us started on a topic of a myth. And then we'll explore together because, you know, as the Course says, the purpose of the world is to learn you're not here. So I'm willing to look at everything I believe that is real here. And that does include my children and my family and myself and everything. And I think if we can look at it without judgment and uncover the purpose that we have used to keep it here and keep it in our awareness and believe it, then when the purpose is exposed, which I think ultimately is the purpose of keeping us separate from God, and why we are afraid of that. That's where I would like to go with this class, is why are we afraid of God and what we've put as our defenses? Because having had that oneness absolute experience, there is nothing to be afraid of. So the part of me or any of us that's afraid has to be sorted out and looked at. And so I'm hoping that anybody that's game for this will join me, because it's just going to be a very deep and honest look without judgment at just what keeps us here. And that's my sort of thought about the program tonight.
And Joanne would like to speak.
Hello, everybody. Hope everybody is well. Can you hear me? Okay, good. Yes, Mary, I really enjoyed your talk, and I could draw on some similarities. I had a similar experience, not quite as detailed, probably 2009, and I slipped into the void. I knew I wasn't in Kansas anymore. I knew I was in a, you know, an alternate reality or someplace else, someplace besides what we consider to be real. And I just remember being so afraid. I was so scared, and I just fought to come back. And then after I, you know, came back, I was regretful. I said, I wish I wasn't so afraid. I could have let, if I did just, it was like I had the chance, and if I just let myself go, it was almost like being in a rapid river. I could have just let go and just seen where it took me, but I was afraid, and fear brought me back. So I think that answers the question for me. It's that's what keeps us tethered here, is fear. And so that's just my thoughts on it, but it was a wonderful talk. I'm definitely going to listen to it again, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Anybody else want to share? Let's see, we have a few more minutes. Let's see where we go. Then we have our closing song at some point, I think about 11:30. So we have some more time to talk. Kathy has her hand up.
Oh, I totally enjoyed your sharing, Mary. And I also recall something you wrote about, and I think this was before the forum, I don't really know, but I remember reading your account of a dream that had a raging bull in that dream. Mm-hmm. And even now, I'm sorry.
That's okay, sweetie. Take your time, Kathy. It's okay. We're all just...
The fear in that image was, mm-hmm. I mean, so palpable to me. Even recalling it is just like, oh. So I'm surprised that this is coming up again, just even speaking about it. I'm a little overwhelmed at the intensity of it. So when you speak of like the fear of God or the fear of going home, it seems juxtaposed with what's going on right now. And so that feels like a huge block. And somehow that dream that you were sharing was just like, oh, you know, repulsive in how I was experiencing it, and so vivid in your just recounting of that. And so I can see how, I'm going to use the word powerful in a human experience, even this emotionally, you know, charged feeling of that fear can be a real seeming barrier. I don't know what to say beyond that, so I'll just let it go with that.
Kathy, thank you for that honest opening. You know, you're not alone with the effects of that fear. Some of us suppress it so much we're not even in touch with it. We don't, you know, we have been conditioned to think, you know, being afraid is a sign of weakness. We've been groomed and conditioned to be personally strong, and you know, we've been taught not to look at what scares us. You know, we're good soldiers here. We're good soldiers, and we just fight the fight. But, you know, maybe we need to turn around and look at what we're fighting and how scared we are. You know, I had a lot of months after this experience, years after this experience, of being totally terrified of being alive in this world. I felt so vulnerable, and everything seemed a possible threat. And unless I think we can acknowledge that, yes, we are afraid, whether it's, you know, from a false belief or not, it needs to be seen, and it needs to come up. And we need to look at what the purpose of being afraid serves, because if I'm afraid of something like the love of God or getting a disease or losing a loved one, whatever it is, the form of the fear doesn't matter. But if I'm afraid of anything, or if I feel like it scares me, then that makes it external, scaring a me, then I'm the responsibility is off me and on that thing, the disease, the germ, the death, the whatever. But if I can look at the purpose being afraid serves to keep me from God's love, then boy, I'm going to bust it open. And I'm going to feel a lot of things, because I've relied on my own self to keep me safe. And when I'm afraid, I don't feel safe. I think we could all agree on that. But you know, ultimately, whatever we are afraid of in form, ultimately is the fear of God. It's just playing out in the world somehow. So knowing, just admitting that is a big step, because I would say most humans suppress that to the degree that they're not in touch with it. And then when something scares them, it's that external thing that scares them. They don't ever relate it below that, would be my thoughts on that. So I appreciate you opening it up to that emotion and that experience. Because I'm hoping with this class that we can look and see what's under all this. It's not me that's going to find it. I'm just hoping that we are gathered so that it can come through and show us what we're believing. And I'm willing, I need it as much as anybody, so I'm willing to see if it can be explored in this way. So thank you. Thank you a lot. So is anybody else want to comment or have any contemplations that arose? We have a few more minutes. And
Actually, we could play the song now because we have just enough time for the song.
Okay, great. This song I picked out, it's kind of a Nashville sound. And if you can hear the words well, they're brilliant words. But also the chorus, just imagine Jesus is saying this to all of us.
I said it, I meant it, you will never thirst again, you will never thirst again. You look for water but the well is dry. All you taste is the tears you cry. Bite into a twisted dream. So you order up another drink. All the lovers in the world couldn't help undo the damage that you've done to yourself. History, digging yourself in too deep. I said it, I meant it, you will never thirst again, you will never thirst again. You lost your soul. You see your reflection in a piece of gold. Lost yourself in a mason jar. Lord knows you got a thirsty heart. I said it, I meant it. It won't quench your thirst, no matter how deep. Cup your hands like a broken shell. Taste the water from a different well. I said it, I meant it. You will never thirst again. You will never thirst again. Say, I meant it. You will never thirst again. You will never thirst again.
You enjoyed that one too. It's a beautiful thing to keep in mind. He said it and he meant it. I am so grateful for the opportunity to join and speak. I've hung out here a lot. I've enjoyed being part of the community in the back of the room. But I, like I said, something got a hold of me, and I guess we're going to dive deep together if you want to. So I love all of you in the deepest part of the one heart that we are. So thank you so much, and I'll see you at 6:30, hopefully.